Gil Cavalcanti is going to talk about SKT geometry.
Thanks for the invitation. So this edition of the GAP conference. It's geometer and proud, I imagine. What I'm going to be talking about is this paper in the archive, same title as the conference. When I talk to geometers, every now and then I start talking about SKT things, and then the question is, what is that? So I guess that I should start just telling you what SKT structures are. So first, before the S comes in, there is just the concept of a Keller structure torsion. And that's just a Hermitian structure with a connection for which the torsion is fully skew symmetric and for which the metric and the complex structure are parallel. This is, in fact, no restriction on the Hermitian structure. Any Hermitian structure can be given a unique connection with these properties. So that's a bismuth connection. So until here, it's really just a Hermitian structure with some extra thing that it always accepts and it's uniquely determined by the Hermitian structure. The strong condition, so S stands for strong, and it really is about the torsion. It's not really about the Keller structure, even though we do put strong KT. It's a Keller structure with strong torsion is just one of these structures up here for which this three-form torsion is actually closed. When you state it like this, it's a bit of a mysterious thing what we mean by what kind of integrability is put in a nice structure when you ask that the torsion is closed. But that, anyway, that's what it is. You can phrase it in a different way, which makes it a bit clearer what the integrability condition is, which is just forget about the connection and just require that this Hermitian structure is not really closed. The Hermitian form is not really closed, but it's DDC closed. And in this case, this H, the torsion that we had earlier, is going to be DC of omega. I may have missed the multiple there. It might be a half or two. So this is the standard classical setting for SKT structures. Examples of SKT structures, why should I care about them? Well, every Keller manifold is an example, but of course, this is just saying that I'm generalizing that concept. So I'm just saying I'm generalizing a useful concept. Every compact, even dimensional Lie group is also an example, so there are plenty of those. Every compact complex surface admits a unique SKT structure in each conformal class of metrics. So that actually is the tool that we use to study complex surfaces which are not Keller. So it's actually an important fact in the study of complex surfaces. And if you look at the moduli space of instantons over such surfaces, you again get an SKT structure. More generally, you could even look at the moduli space of instantons over Hermitian manifolds with Godeschal metrics. I'm not going to tell you what that is, but there is a generalization of the previous line that goes to any dimensions now. And a classification of these things has also been done in six-dimensional new manifolds. So there are quite a few examples out there, and some of these are arguably important. So let me just say what we lose. So strong KT is phrased in very similar terms to Keller structure. So a Keller structure would be one for which the metric and the complex structure are parallel for the Levitch-Vita connection. Now I introduce just this torsion term. And you might ask yourself, what's the difference? So here is what you have for Keller manifolds. I'm seeing here a bunch of things. I'm not being very precise of what I mean by each one of these terms. So Hodge theory in a Keller manifold may mean that the cohomology decomposes or that you have an identity of Laplacians. Frobenius spectral sequence degenerates is often seen as a consequence of Hodge theory, but it can happen independently. For example, for every complex surface, the Frobenius spectral sequence degenerates, and very few of those, not many of those, are Keller. So there's a difference here. You get topological obstruction, topological properties out of Hodge theory on a Keller manifold. And Keller manifolds arguably have unobstructed deformations, meaning that if you were to deform the complex structure, you could deform the symplectic structure together with it to get to so you remain Keller. That's a result of Kodaira. So that's the good things you have about Keller manifolds. There's a few of them, so I'm more concerned about Hodge theory and consequences of Hodge theory here, but there are several other good things about Keller manifolds, of course. Now, I mentioned that we have examples of SKT structures on new manifolds. This was done by Fino, Parton, and Salomon in this paper in 2002-2004. And they studied this question of whether, well, they didn't really ask this question, but the point is that they were looking, they say, this is a complex manifold, so you have a PQ decomposition of forms, given just by the ordinary decomposition into PQ components by the complex structure. And you can also study the deformations of these structures. So you can ask all these questions just thinking of them as complex manifolds with some extra structure. So you can just repeat the same questions, and then that's what you get. So it's not the cohomology doesn't decompose. You don't get Hodge theory. There is no Frobisher spectral sequence that degenerates early. There is a Frobisher spectral sequence that just doesn't degenerate early. They're not formal, and they explicitly study the deformation problem in an example, and they show that in that particular example, the deformations are obstructed. So things got pretty bad once you put that tree form there. Now, I'll take a look at this from a generalized complex point of view. In generalized complex point of view, a Keller structure is a pair of generalized complex structures. So to be totally fair with this table here, I'll have to say that the Keller structures, the deformations are unobstructed only if you deform the complex structure. If you were to deform the symplectic structure, then it might be obstructed. Actually, it's the Tian-Todorov deformation. So you actually need a Calabi-Yau condition to say that it's truly unobstructed. So you need some further hypothesis to really be able to claim that for whatever generalized complex structure you pick, the deformation space is unobstructed. So technically, I should put a cross there as well, meaning that it's yellow, meaning that if you put enough hypothesis, you actually get it turned green, but in principle, it's not really unobstructed. And I would like to take a look at this table from a generalized complex point of view, so I'll change a bit what cohomology I'll consider. I'll change with that the Hodge theory that goes with it and the corresponding spectral sequence. And I'll turn this table into that. So it's a little improvement over what's known. Formality remains elusive. Of course, the manifolds, we have examples of manifolds with SKT structures which are not formal. But you might ask whether there is some formal differential graded algebra associated to the spaces, even if it's not the space of forms itself. So that one, it's unclear right now if you can turn that one into green. And here, it's pretty clear that it's a very similar picture to the Keller case. You get cohomology classes that obstruct the deformation problem. So I'd like to talk about all of that, but of course, coffee comes in 1 hour time, so maybe I won't get to deformations. I have to see how far you get here. So the insights that we use to actually treat this problem are two. One of them is that really SKT structures, even though they were defined in classical terms, they actually are also part of the generalized family. They're also generalized complex structures a la Hitching. And the description of description of the intrinsic torsion for generalized almost remission structures that somehow allows us to say things about things that are not just generalized complex, but a little bit beyond. So you can say something about SKT structures or things with parallel skew torsion. Oh, sorry, I mean parallel structures with closed skew torsion. Okay, so there is a description of the intrinsic torsion that allows us to treat more geometric structures than what we have been doing before with generalized complex structures. Okay, so this is what we are going to talk about. Geometry of T plus T star, so just set up the language. The Niehaus tensor in intrinsic torsion, so I explain in a graphic way what this intrinsic torsion looks like. Then Hodge theory, I hope I'll at least get this far, and maybe we're lucky and get to deformations before coffee time, but some of us do want coffee. So let's go. Geometry of T plus T star. So the first thing that you have in T plus T star is the natural pairing, yes? No integrability.
No integrability. So it's not just like you have a pair of them, but only one of them is integrable.
Neither of them is integrable, not necessarily. So in this picture here, I mean. The description is really for a pair of non-integrable generalized complex structures. I get a bunch of tensors. As these tensors vanish, I can tell something about the geometry. So if a certain combination vanishes, I get integrability of one or both. But if different combinations vanish, I get, I don't know, parallel or SKT. So these things don't coincide necessarily. It's going to be clear once I get to the graphics. So T plus T star, the first thing you have in T plus T star is a natural pairing. So if you have a vector and a form, you can pair them on each other. So here for me, x's and y's are vectors, and eta's and xi's are forms. And that's the natural pairing there for you. T plus T star acts on forms this way. So it can contract with the vector and wedge with the form. And if you do that twice, so here v for me is just a section of T plus T star. So v is an element of the form x plus xi. If you do it twice, you get just the natural pairing of v on itself. So that means that you actually get an action of the Clifford algebra of T plus T star on the space of forms. And then you can think of forms as spinners for this T plus T star. We lose, once you do that, okay, maybe I'm going a little too fast here. So here I'm really acting on forms. And for those who are not familiar with generalized geometry, I'm really thinking of forms as multi-degree things and not decomposing them into homogeneous parts. So all we can say here is that it sends even forms, odd forms, and vice versa. It doesn't really preserve degree. So that's something that's at first maybe a bit difficult for us to grasp. Once you start thinking of these forms as spinners, even the wedge product of forms is gone out of the window. You should not really be taking wedge products. It's not very well behaved with respect to this structure. All you have left is this spin invariant pairing, which picks two multi-degree forms and gives you a top degree form. Okay. So that's the beginning of the structure of T plus T star. It has this natural pairing. Before you go, I'm just going to do linear algebra first. So once you have T plus T star, you can put a generalized metric on it. And for me, a generalized metric is an orthogonal self-adjoint bundle isomorphism. So it's a map from T plus T star to T plus T star. I'm requiring to be orthogonal and self-adjoint. Maybe I actually wrote it in the next slide. So there we go. So this first thing here says it's orthogonal, so the inverse is equal to the transpose. And self-adjoint says the transpose is equal to G itself. So G squared is the identity. That means that G splits T plus T star into its eigenspaces, plus and minus one eigenspaces. So this is T plus T star. And you get a plus one eigenspace and a minus one eigenspace. They are eigenspaces of a self-adjoint operator, so they are orthogonal to each other. And actually, the metric is determined by V plus. So if you know V plus, that's where G is equal to, say, plus 1. Then V minus is the orthogonal complement. That's where it's minus 1. You just extend it by linearity. So if you give me a maximal space of positive, where the natural pairing is positive in T plus T star, you give me a metric. Okay, so it's equivalent. You can just give me a V plus. It's a space where the natural pairing is positive. And if you give me that, you give me a metric. And vice versa. Once you get a generalized metric, you can also talk about the generalized Hodge star, as Marco introduced back in 2004. So you need for that the generalized metric and the orientation, just like in the usual Riemannian case. And that gives you a generalized Hodge star. I'm not going to define it for you, but I'll just tell you that if you pick a non-zero form and pair with this spin invariant pairing with itself, you get something that's a positive volume form with respect to the orientation. And the star satisfies this nicer identity. So if you look at the Hodge star, the usual one, what it does on forms, the square is always minus 1 to the k, n minus k. So it's not a particularly nice thing because it depends on the degree of the form. In this case, you actually get something that doesn't depend on the degree of the form, just depends on the dimension. This is the dimension of my manifold, m. So actually, it seems a bit nicer. And actually allows you to, for example, define self-dual and anti-self-dual forms in any dimension. You don't have to be in the middle in the middle degree or anything like that. You just say, well, have a multi-degree form. It's self-dual if it's in this eigenspace. And it's anti-self-dual if it's in that eigenspace. Okay, so the next thing that we want to introduce is a generalized complex structure. So right now, I don't have integrability yet, so it's just linear algebra. And what we want is that you have a bundle automorphism, which is a complex structure, so it squares and minus the identity, and which is orthogonal with respect to the natural pairing. The same way that for the metric, I could describe the metric in terms of V plus, I can also describe the generalized complex structure in terms of its plus I eigenspace. So if you know what L is, you take L bar, that's the minus eigenspace, and you declare that J is plus I on L minus I on L bar, and extend by linearity. The properties that L has is that it's a maximal isotropic subspace, and it doesn't intersect the minus eigenspace. So if you give me some space with these three properties here, or two, maximal isotropic, L intersect L bar equals zero, you give me a generalized almost complex structure. And here we have, it's orthogonal, so J transpose is the inverse, and it's a complex structure, so the inverse is minus J. So that means that J is actually skew symmetric. So here, it's supposed to have a bracket here. It's wedge two of T plus T star, forgot the parentheses there. And that's actually the Lie algebra of the spin group of T plus T star with the natural pairing. So it's actually an element in the Lie algebra of the spin group. And since forms were my spinners, it acts on forms accordingly, and I get a decomposition of forms into spaces. So I get a decomposition into spaces uk for k varying between minus n and n, okay? The un, for example, is the canonical line bundle. For a complex structure, it would really be the canonical line bundle, and the whole structure is actually determined by the line un. But let's move on from here. Now, you put these two things together. If you have a generalized metric and a generalized complex structure, you can just ask them to be compatible, and the compatibility that gives you a generalized almost Hermitian structure is just this one here. Gj1 is equal to j1g, so they commute. Once you do that, you can just declare that J2 is this product. It's a product of two orthogonal operators, so it's a still orthogonal. And it's going to commute with J1, but you can actually check it squares to minus 1 as well. So it's, again, a generalized complex structure, at least an almost one. I don't have integrability at this point yet. So whenever you give me a generalized Hermitian structure, I get automatically two generalized complex structures, and you could quite well have defined it that way. You say that's a pair of commuting generalized complex structures for which the metric is minus the product of them. So it's equivalent. Now, once you have one of these generalized Hermitian structures, you get a decomposition of T plus T star, not just into the plus and minus one eigenspaces of the metric, that would be the V plus, and the plus and minus one eigenspaces of J1, that would be the one zeros, but you actually get an intersection because these operators commute. So you can actually diagonalize them simultaneously, and that's what we have here. This is complexified. But you decompose the complexification of T plus T star into a sum of four different spaces. And accordingly, since J1 and J2 commute, they also decompose the forms into intersections of the eigenspaces. So again, you can diagonalize them simultaneously. So you have UPQ. I'll call this later just UPQ, but it's the intersection of UP with UQ for J1 and J2. And the good thing of having that is that this compatibility between the metric and the generalized complex structure also tells you that things like the Hodge star becomes well-behaved. So the Hodge star is just the product of, well, the exponential action of J1 and J2. So if you were in UPQ, where J1 is IP and J2 is IQ, you exponentiate that, you get just that the Hodge star is I to the P plus Q on each one of these components. So I have here a decomposition of the space of forms. I think I missed one graphic here, but the idea is that I get a grid like that. Running out of space on my board. You get a grid like that. Unfortunately, it's not very well spaced. So this is N0, this is U0N, and these are all the non-trivial UPQ spaces. They sit inside a little diamond like that. Here we have the diamond. So from this description here, since the Hodge star is given in a very specific way on each one of these elements in this diamond, you can actually describe the space of self-dual and anti-self-dual forms very clearly once you have a generalized Hermitian structure. The self-duals, they come in the diagonals of this grid. So the top one is always self-dual, and then they alternate from that point onwards. Now, it's a lot of linear algebra. You don't get very far if you just do linear algebra. At some point, you have to put some integrability. And integrability comes in the form of the current bracket. So this is the current bracket for you. And maybe a better way to understand it is the derived bracket on t plus t star. Oh, this is the h to get a d plus h wedge. So if you have if you let this declare this to be the element in t plus t star, which when acting on forms gives me this operator here. So you just have to check that if you were to do this operation here, you'd get again just the action of an element of t plus t star. Anyway. H was the torsion in the beginning. It's a closed tree form. Yeah, exactly, yes. It's the closed tree form we had in the beginning of the, and I should have probably written here somewhere. And this D here is also supposed to be twisted. It's D plus H wedge, actually. So that's what we use for integrability. So to understand integrability of a generalized complex structure, so first we normally just say a generalized complex structure is one for which L is involutive. I'll just like to not do it right away, so I'll just like to start with a generalized almost complex structure. And if you give me one of those, you can define this operator here. So the idea is that this L bar is a maximal isotropic subspace. So if I take the bracket of two guys in L bar, if it was back in L bar in a parity of a third one, I'll just get zero. And actually, if it's not in L bar, I can find a third one which doesn't pair zero. So the vanishing of this quantity here is equivalent to integrability of the generalized complex structure. Okay? So if you're asking whether L bar is involutive, you might quite well look at this quantity here and see what comes out of it. So it turns out that even though I'm using brackets and everything, and it's not very symmetric on V1, V2, and V3, it is the case that it is. This actually is a tensor. It's a tensor. It's in wedge 3 of L. So I'm using here the natural pairing to identify L with the dual of L bar. Okay. So it's actually a skew symmetric tree form. Just no cyclic permutations needed. That's just what it is. And it's clear that J is integrable if and only if this skew symmetric tree form is zero. Now, if you want to know what dh does to forms, so you can actually decompose. You pick an element in UK, apply dh to that, and see where it lands. And at first, you might expect it lands everywhere. It could be a huge mess. It could be a huge mess. Let me just make it silent so it doesn't ring again. But in fact, it doesn't. It has only four components. So if you are in UK, you can only go up by three. And that's precisely the Clifford action of this guy here. You can go up by one, and that's just a del operator. It's in a complex structure, it would be really like the del operator for complex structures. And you can go backwards if they're complex conjugates. So you only have these four operators decomposing dh. You don't have more than that. So it's not as messy as you'd think. So even for a generalized almost complex structure, the picture is actually quite simple. Now, the things become interesting if you say, well, what if I have two? What if I have a generalized Hermitian structure? Then you get that. So the idea is that you can change the peak grading by one or three, just as in the previous slide, right? You can change it by one or three. And similarly, you can go back by one or three. And that's both in lines and in columns. So you get all these many components here. It's a beautiful picture. I can just stare at it. Anyway, so that's what you get if you don't require integrability. That's the picture of what the H does. If you apply it to a PQ form, it gives you this many components here. All of these things are tensors, except for these little ones here in the center. They are true differential operators. All the rest of it is just decomposing the Niehaus tensor that we had earlier, this N, into a bunch of different components. If you want integrability of J1, for example, then you see that the P grading can't change by more than one. So you get that picture. If you want to get integrability of J1 and J2, then neither of them can change by more than one. And that's the generalized Keller picture. Now we come to SKT structure. So an SKT structure, that's something that's it's already Marco's thesis, a simple computation. He was worried about generalized Keller structure, so he didn't really develop on this. But the basic picture is that the SKT data that he had in the beginning actually is equivalent to the following. It's equivalent to putting a complex structure just on V plus, not on the whole of T plus T star. You just put one on V plus, and you require that one is integrable. So that's precisely the SKT data. And the H that I'm using here to twist the current bracket is the same one that appears as DC of omega. Now, this kind of thing, so if you look at what the Niehaus tensor looks like, it's a bracket of something like this. We've paired with a third thing. Now, if V plus is back on V plus, and if I pair if anything on V plus 1, 0, I should get 0. And if I pair if anything V minus, I should get 0 as well. So if I just extend this to a generalized Hermitian structure, I'll just assume for now, for the whole talk, that whenever I have an SKT structure, I have extended it to a generalized Hermitian structure. So I can go back to my picture, and I get this picture for the Niehaus tensor, or for the decomposition of DH. So now DH cannot do, this corresponds to V plus 1, 0, V plus 1, 0, and V minus would be in the diagonal, and V plus 1, 0 again would be up here. So the fact that from this, I can conclude that three things vanish. I get the three arrows here disappear, okay? Right now, I'm picking the second, the generalized complex extension rather freely. So I don't require, for example, integrability of either J1 or J2, so I have these extra arrows here. Let me just back that for a bit. But so if I wanted, I could just require, so that's something that can always be done. You can be a bit more judicious in your choice of generalized complex extension of your SKT structure, and you can actually get these things here to vanish, these two arrows here. So but that's a choice you make, okay? And so let me just go back here. So maybe I guess I should point out something else that you can get already from this graph. If you look at what DH is doing, so the relevant spaces for SKT structure, since it's defined just in terms of a tensor on V plus, this UPQ decomposition only appeared because I extended it to a generalized complex structure, a generalized Hermitian structure, but it's not really natural. The natural spaces for the SKT point of view, they're actually the diagonals of this of the UPQ decomposition. So I'll call WK the corresponding diagonal, P plus Q equals to K. Here we go. So WK is P plus Q equals to K. And then you see from this picture here that it only sends each diagonal either to one up or one down or keeps it. So there are only three components of DH with respect to this diagonal decomposition. So you get that if you have an SKT structure, DH should do this to diagonals, and that actually is equivalent to the SKT condition. Okay. So that allows you to define three operators. So you define delta n plus to be the one that goes up in the diagonal, delta n plus bar, the one that goes down in the diagonal, and this delta minus slash to be the one that preserves the diagonal, okay? And if you were to choose your generalized complex extension of the SKT structure to be integrable, so say you can always make the J1 to be integrable, then you'd get those two terms that were around here, they vanish. And there's only one component left in the Niehaus tensor. So in a very precise way, what you're seeing here is that SKT structures are precisely halfway between generalized Hermitian and generalized scalar. A generalized Hermitian had another arrow coming up here, and generalized scalar had both of those arrows disappearing. So here we are getting that an SKT structure is really half integrable. One component of the two of the Neuhaus tensor of a generalized Hermitian structure has gone missing now. So you might think of that. So how nice are they? They are at least a little bit nicer than generalized Hermitian, a little bit less nice than generalized scalar. And from this decomposition, you see why I gave these funny names to my operators, delta plus and delta minus. So what you get here is that delta plus, for example, delta n plus is the sum of delta plus and this component of the Niehaus tensor, and the bar is the other way around. And same thing for delta minus. So delta minus slash is the sum of delta minus and delta minus bar. And again, you can just say that if you have a generalized Hermitian structure, this is an extension of an SKT structure if and only if the DH decomposes into a sum of six operators instead of those 16 operators we had earlier. So this is just those six guys here. Okay. So this is at least what generalized complex structures can tell you for SKT structures. That's what they look like. So in a way, they have a very neat description. Now, Hodge theory, we have already a generalized metric, have a Hodge star operator, and once you have that, so if you have an orientation on your manifold as well, you can define two operators. They are kind of generalizations in the setting of the signature and Euler characteristic operator. So the index of one of these is going to be the Euler characteristic, and the index of the other one is going to be the signature. This is just depending on the dimension you are, one of them or the other, okay? So this is, seems to be a natural operator to consider. They are particularly natural because if you pick, so omega plus is the section of the self-dual forms, and omega minus is the sections of the anti-self-dual forms, then they have this nice property that d plus sends self-duals to anti-self-duals and d minus and vice versa. So it switches the duality of the form, while d minus preserves the duality of the form. Okay, so that's a nice description of them. You might think of them actually this way instead of that way. So if you are at a form, if you say it's a self-dual form, you take d of it, you pick the self-dual component is d minus, the anti-self-dual component is d plus. So it's the composition of the age with respect to self-dual and anti-self-dual form, the composition of forms. And the good thing about these guys, which actually comes from this equation here, is that they both essentially square to the Laplacian. Okay? Just dh plus dh star, and you get a sign. So they are like Dirac operators. They're square roots of the Laplacian. Now, the theorem here is that in a compact SKT manifold, the dh cohomology actually splits according to this decomposition into the diagonals. So I can't ask for more in an SKT structure, but the diagonals are naturally defined in terms of an SKT structure, and the cohomology actually decomposes with respect to that. And I'm not going to say much about this today, but you have a similar description to what I'm doing here for parallel almost Hermitian structure. So here you just require that you have the strong connection, so a connection with closed torsion, and require that the holonomy of that connection is un, but you don't require integrability of the complex structure. That's not something that comes for free from parallel, from the fact that it's parallel. So even if you don't have integrability of the complex structure, you can still prove the same theorem. So this is, in a way, is telling me that the theorem is not a result about integrability of complex structures, but it really is a result about special holonomy. But I'm not going to develop on this today. So the proof for Hodge theory is this. Here is the graph for of the decomposition of dH for an SKT structure. You look at what is d minus in the picture. That is the big question here. So d minus was the one that sent self-duals to self-duals or anti-self-duals to anti-self-duals. And you know that the self-duals, they come, anti-self-duals, they come alternating as the diagonal. So if this guy is self-dual, this one is anti-self-dual, and this one is self-dual. Right, they alternate in the diagonals. So if you look at the ones that actually preserve the duality, they're only these guys in the middle here. They are the only ones that actually pick whatever this one is, say self-dual, and give me self-dual back. The other guys are in the nearby diagonals, so they have different duality. They are anti-self-duals now. So the decomposition of for D minus actually just is what D minus looks like. And actually it clearly preserves the diagonal. Since the square of d minus is the Laplacian, you get the Laplacian also preserves the diagonal. So you get a corresponding decomposition of forms. That's the proof, okay? So it's a graphic proof, if you like. In a compact, so actually let me just make one comment. I said something about parallel structures. So the difference between this an SKT and a parallel structure is just that you turn one extra component of the Neuhaus tensor for the parallel structure. You get the one that goes all the way three diagonals up. That's the only difference from SKT to parallel UN structures. But again, because it goes three diagonals up, the same argument holds. The D minus looks like the same thing. And that's why, as long as you have parallel, you have a decomposition of cohomology, okay? And this is the DH cohomology. Just to make clear that this is some sort of improvement, the DH cohomology, because H is a tree form, the DH cohomology is really only Z2 graded, meaning that's even or odd, and here you're actually getting a Z grading to that. So the SKT structure is improving the grading of your cohomology. You actually can make it into a Z cross Z2, because the even and odd forms are not really seen by this diagonal, so you can refine it to have diagonals intersect even and odd forms. So you actually get a Z cross Z2 grading of the cohomology of an SKT structure. And here we have actually a difference. So maybe this is a split between say, Keller geometry and special holonomy geometry. So we know that for special holonomy, the cohomology decomposes according to reducible representations of the holonomy group, at least in the Levi-Civita, in the torsionless case. But in the Keller case, you have a little bit more. You have identity of Laplacians. That seems to be something that's missing in the special holonomy picture. And that's, for example, one of the reasons why you have formality for Keller manifolds. And you don't know that kind of thing for spin 7 or G2 manifolds. So for SKT structures, you get something like that as well. Because you have integrability of that complex structure, it's a bit better than just saying that you have a parallel structure. You get identity of Laplacians. The delta n Laplacian is equal to the dh Laplacian up to a multiple. And the proof is also very simple. First thing you notice that integration by parts, together with the fact that the Hodge star is actually very well behaved with respect to the UPQ decomposition, just gives you this this thing that the adjoint of delta n is just minus delta n bar. So the adjoint is very simple. It's just a complex conjugate, essentially. And then if you want to know what the Laplacian looks like, well, so first, what is D plus? D plus, you go back to our graph there. Let me see if I have the graph here somewhere here. Well, maybe this is not the best graph. But D plus was this guy here, which is delta n plus, and this guy here, delta n minus. So it has these two components. So D plus is just the sum of delta n plus and delta n minus. And this bar, or delta n plus bar. And this bar here is the same thing as just taking minus the adjoint. So if you look at what the square of what the Laplacian is, it's the square of the plus. And the square of this thing is just the Laplacian for the delta plus. Okay. So for an SKT manifold, you actually get identity of Laplacians, not just the composition of the cohomology, but there's a little bit more here. Now, this is a computation, so you can actually find let me see if I have a proof. Yeah, I don't really have a proof. So what you can do here is just, there is an automorphism of forms which sends the usual del. So now I'm thinking of a strong KT structure as really the classical one. It's a complex, it's a Hermitian structure. You have a complex structure there. So you actually get a relationship between the usual complex del operator and the del plus bar. And you have a relation between the del bar of omega and this n. So since delta n is the sum of those two guys, you get that this is a linear map. You get that the del plus 2i del bar omega cohomology is related to the delta n cohomology. So actually it's the same because they correspond to each other by this isomorphism. So you have an isomorphism between this cohomology and the dh cohomology. And here I'm using already the fact that the delta n plus cohomology is the same as the dh cohomology because of this result here. Okay. So in a strong KT manifold, you can even say something about the ordinary double cohomology of your manifold. You have to twist it a little. And this twisting is a little different from what you do if you're just doing giant complex structures, because normally you'd like to, say, preserve the P minus Q difference. So from a generalized complex point of view, the natural thing would be to say del plus I del omega instead of del bar omega. But that's the one that is relevant here. And you can decompose h as dh as this. So h was dc of omega. So you actually get that dh is del plus del bar. That's the d part. And h itself is I del bar minus I del. So you decompose it as the sum of those two operators. Both of them is squared to zero in the graded commute. So you get here a spectral sequence that starts with the cohomology of this guy here, say, and converges to the cohomology of dh. And what you're getting here is that because the cohomology of this guy here is already the dh cohomology, that spectral sequence degenerates at the second page. Okay, so the Frobisher spectral sequence, if you twist everything with h, it actually already collapses at the second page as well, which is different from what you'd get if you're just considering dels without the twisting by h. Okay, how am I doing? How long do I have? 15. Okay, so you guys should stop me. I'm sure that I just read the slides and it goes far too fast. I didn't expect to get this far. Okay, let's move on though. Next question I'd like to ask is about deformations of strong KT manifolds. And deformations, so this is going to be a bit sketchy because, well, if you start going too much into details, it becomes a little messy. But the idea is that you want to deform your structure just by letting the orthogonal group act on your structure. So just conjugate your generalized complex structures by an orthogonal transformation. And you hope that that's going to give you something integrable, or you want to study conditions under which you're going to get some integrability. Now, the small deformation, so it would be the image of the exponential map. So you can just pick something in the algebra of spin, t plus t star. So these are just the two forms on t plus t star. And you exponentiate that, and that's going to give you small deformations of your structure. Now, just like in the Keller case, if you were going to ask what's the deformation space of a Keller structure, that's a bad question, because you can pick any function, apply d bar to that function, and that gives you a new Keller form. So it's a problem that has maybe too many solutions. And you'd like to phrase it more in a context of stability. Say you deform one of the structures and want to know if the other one can be deformed so that you remain Keller. So that's what you're going to do here. Which deformations of J1, so here I'm picking a generalized complex, integrable generalized complex extension of an SKT structure, I'm saying I'll deform that one. And I'd like to know which deformations of the metric or equivalent of J2 can be, if I can deform a metric or J2 so that the pair remains an SKT structure. Okay, so integrability of the deformed J1 is going to be a given. I'm assuming that I'm deforming J1 within the integrability world, so this is still a generalized complex structure. And I'd like to know what can I say about J2? Can I deform it so that it remains SKT? It still gives me an SKT structure. So the setup here is just, well, we pick a section. So deformations of J1 are given by exponentials of elements here. Actually, technically, it's this plus the bar of it and real elements. So the relevant part really lies in here. And what we normally do is just what we are led to consider is just, instead of changing the structure, we kind of bring everything back to time zero, and that changes the differential operator that we are considering. So instead of saying that I'll change the structure, I can kind of fix the PQ decomposition as the one at time zero. And instead of changing the structure, I'm changing the operator that's giving me the integrability. So the correct operator to consider would be something like this, which is you conjugate dH by this element here. And if you think what the linearization of that is, at least to get an idea of what you're doing, you're just taking the graded commutator of the action of dH and alpha on forms, okay? And this, I do that with respect still to the UPQ splitting. And the question is just whether when I change the operator this way, if I would be able to keep the nine Hall tensors vanishing in the correct way. So strong KT structure has one non-vanishing component of the nine Hall tensor, and I'd like to just have that one, and no other components should appear once I do something like this. So the assumption is that alpha is giving me an integrable deformation of J1, and I'd like to know if I can find an integrable deformation of J2 to go with it. The natural operators, if you look, because of this commutator here, so the natural operators are actually taking place in, say, the exterior algebra of LJ1 or LJ2, and they are of this form. They are really the commutators of delta plus, delta minus, and n with the Clifford action of an element in here or somewhere else. But at least the natural operators are graded commutators. That's the important thing here. Now, if you deform alpha in the way that I just described, so here is here's the alpha. You split it into three components because you have a generalized metric. So you can pick your un for J1 and map it into n minus 2, 2, or n minus 2, 0, or n minus 2, minus 2. So it has three components. And integrability of this structure essentially means that these next arrows that come here, but you should think of it as graded commutators still. So it really is that if you go with alpha and then del bar minus, or del bar minus, which stops somewhere in the middle, and then alpha minus, that should be 0. So that sum should be 0. It's not just that the composition is 0. But if you think of that, then integrability of J1 says that whatever's coming here next is a bunch of zeros. Okay. Otherwise, I would get a component of the Nordenhaus tensor of J1, which I'm assuming I don't have. I'm assuming I'm deforming J1 as an integrable structure. So this the I'm linearizing here. I'm just saying the first order approximation. You can do it in general, so it's a power series argument. And I think that for now, seeing the linearized case is enough to get an idea of what's going on. And what you're getting is that, say, so here I have this operator delta plus, for example. You're getting that delta plus bar of alpha plus is zero, for example, something that's coming out of here. There's a relation between delta plus bar of this one and delta minus bar of alpha plus, and so on. So there are relations here, but whatever comes here is zero. Whoa, okay? So that's the picture for J2. And I'm drawing here one extra space that doesn't really exist, just because it's commutator. So actually, I can go down with n bar somewhere here, and then apply, I guess, somewhere here, and then apply alpha bar plus minus. So I'm just using the same operators that I have here, the alpha plus minus and so on, and the complex conjugates. And I'm just saying, well, what happens if I deform the J2 structure of that? What do I get? So I get all these new arrows. I'm just drawing here the relevant ones. And the important thing is that I get this new component here. So this new component is the one that I don't like, because the SKT structure is something that should pick this one and map to just these three guys. So this one, and this one. So this one is the one that I have to get rid of. And the trick to get rid of this is that you precompose your deformation. So right now I'm using a deformation of this structure, and I'm free to precompose this deformation by anything which preserves this structure. So that's what you do. We precompose, you pick another tensor which is going to preserve this structure, J1, and precompose the whole deformation by that tensor. The effect of that is that you get some freedom here. You're not stuck just with these arrows and asking whether this is zero or not. You actually get an extra arrow. So this is the element that you can use to precompose that doesn't change your deformation. And it appears here as just something that comes from here. And the linearization now gives you this extra arrow. And you're free to choose this one at will. So you're free to choose this beta at will. And the question is whether you can choose beta so that the sum of these three arrows vanishes. Okay. And this is, again, a bunch of commutators. So it's delta plus. Technically, this would be del minus of alpha plus. Del plus bar of beta, and n bar of alpha plus minus. So there are three operators here. So these are the three operators. So I'm already here writing in terms of the commutator operators instead of delta plus itself. So what you need is that this thing here is zero. If that's zero, you have an SKT structure. If it's not zero, then you deform it into something which is just generalized Hermitian. So that's the condition here. You get there is a condition on beta. Delta plus, the same thing as delta, del plus, the same thing as delta plus, squares to zero. So you actually have a cohomology for this operator here. And what you're saying here is that this guy here, you can check, it actually is del bar closed. And the question is just whether it's going to be del bar exact. So there's a cohomology class here that's obstructing your deformation. So the theorem is this, that the obstructions to deforming an SKT structure lie in this space, which is just a shorthand for whatever is the space where this guy lies, okay? So it's H21 del bar of n. So we actually managed to identify the obstruction. So originally, when Fino, Parton, and Salomon found that the deformation problem for SKT structures was obstructed, they didn't really. They just computed one example and showed that in that one example, there were complex structures nearby that could not be completed to SKT structures. So here we're actually showing that this is where the deformation, the obstructions lie. And if this space is zero, then you actually can always deform it. Otherwise, it's a bit more complicated. One kind of trivial remark, actually, is if your alpha only had one component, just the alpha minus, then the deformation is still an SKT structure. This is it's really a trivial remark in many ways. So if you look at this picture here, the alpha minus doesn't appear here. So then you can just pick beta to be zero, if you like. In a more geometric way, you can say that this is happening because when you do this kind of deformation to your generalized complex structure, alpha minus only changes the generalized complex structure on V minus, and V plus, and the SKT structure is defined as something on V plus. So it doesn't change this kind of alpha there. Only changes what's going on. only change is what's going on here. While the SKT structure is something that lives here. So it's actually a rather trivial remark that if your tensor was that special, then you wouldn't have to, you don't have to worry about obstructions. You just get a deformation. Now, the interesting thing is that this actually can arise. If you had a Keller structure, so we know the deformations of the complex structure themselves are an obstruction. So if you deform the complex structure, you get again a Keller structure. But if you deform the symplectic structure, you can actually get out of the Keller world. You become just Hermitian. The idea is that, you need the Calabial condition to be able to deform and remain Keller, Calabial. So what happens is that if you do that, then you actually can split your deformation. So if you're doing a symplectic deformation, you can actually split your symplectic deformation in a bunch of steps. And at the crucial step where the Keller property is lost, what you're doing is a deformation by something like this. So you can actually say that if you think of it as a bi-Hermitian structure, you have a Keller structure where it's a bi-Hermitian if I plus is equal to I minus. And what we do here with this alpha minus is just deform the I minus structure in a non-integrable way. And the result that you get is that even though I minus is not integral, I plus actually remained Keller. So I'm nearly cheating here. So the pair together gives you the deformed symplectic structure. So the message is that even though you think that by deforming the symplectic structure, you would get into trouble, and all you could say is that it's some sort of generalized Hermitian structure because the symplectic form remains integrable. What you get here is a bit better than that. It remains SKT. So there's only one, you can choose so that only one component of the Nienhaus tensor appears instead of both of the components that appear in the generalized Hermitian case. I think that's the end. I'm sorry if I run, but I'm sure there's coffee. That's not included. So for the generalized Keller, you need I plus and I minus in their commutator, right? That's how you get the holomorphic Poisson. So here, if you were wondering about local forms, it is, as far as I can tell, just a complex manifold. I mean, that might be. The SKT structure alone only gives you a complex structure on the manifold. Doesn't give you much more than that. So you might wonder if you have a generalized complex extension of an SKT. What can you say about that? Then I don't think you get holomorphic Poisson because here, for example, I minus can be pretty non-integrable. So I don't see a holomorphic Poisson structure coming out of that.
Any other? Spiro?
I have a couple of questions. You had a relation between these three Laplacians.
Right.
DH Laplacian. Have you compared those Laplacians to the ordinary D Laplacian, the Hodge Laplacian?
No, I have not compared those Laplacians to the Hodge Laplacian. I mean, so the identity I had is saying essentially that those are the DH Laplacians, right? So it is it's whatever the DH Laplacian is. It's the Laplacian, but I did not compare. I don't know what you'd be looking for.
I mean, that one doesn't preserve the degree, but I mean, if you just extend the Hodge Laplacian to act on all forms,
right?
It does preserve the degree, and you take a look at their difference. There should be some kind of curvature expressions coming out.
Well, I did think a bit of some sort of a Weizenbock formula.
Yeah.
It's not that operator there. So the Laplacian for the age is this graded commutator, right? It's the age. And you can expand this. What is the age? Is D plus H wedge, and this is similar. So you do get a lot of operators, but there are still even first order operators there. It's not really a Weizenbock formula that you're going to get out of just comparing the DH Laplacian with the D Laplacian. And this is essentially what you'd do if you were to compare, say, the delta N Laplacian, because it's essentially the same. So I'm sure that there is a Weizenbock formula there somewhere. I think that after the talk yesterday about curvature and so on, we are just a little bit nearer finding that formula. I could not find it yet, but that's something that I have been working on recently. Not that I'm aware of. That's something that we already miss in the generalized Keller case, which is a bit stronger than SKT. There we already, we haven't found yet an SL2 action there. So we don't have primitives and things like that yet.